So, yeah, welcome everybody again. So, you know, I'm one of the organizers of this workshop, and since yesterday I know that I have to give sort of an introduction into why we are here and what we are about to learn here and what goals you would like to achieve. So I also have to improvise a bit, I have to say, so I have just 3 pages here with some handwritten things. So this ought to be, it's supposed to be more like a discussion session, so I'm also waiting for your comments and to the field and to what I'm talking about. So, for some reason, our field is called string phenomenology. So, and in this sense, so it contains two words, strings and phenomenology. And so we are trying to build the bridge to confront string theory, as at the moment we understand it, with phenomenology. So phenomenology means, in particular, the standard model of particle physics. As we know, it has been measured. It also includes recent data from cosmology, which already hints in what is supposed to be tested at the collider LHC in the next years. So we have some hints here for, say, dark matter, the existence of dark matter. And we have hints for dark energy. And as you know, this is much smaller, the amount of dark energy is much smaller than theoretical predictions tell us. And so, yeah, and so here we would like, there are other phenomenologists, not just string phenomenologists, as you know. So there are also people thinking about what comes next beyond the standard model, and they have their own model of the sort. So it's more like an extension of the quantum field theories we are using for the standard model. And the most prominent one is, of course, to use supersymmetry. Of course, there are reasons for that, the gauge hierarchy problem, and so on. And another proposal which already came out of string theory is large extra dimensions. And also warped compact, warped models. So they all have their own kind of predictions for what's supposed to happen at the TEV scale. And then we have these data. And then we, on the other side, we have string theory. It's current status of understanding of string theory, which surely is not complete yet. So we have this on-shell formulation of string theory, but we don't really know. We can't really describe string theory for varying backgrounds, for instance. No, we only have a background dependent description of string theory, and the first quantized version of that. And you know, maybe here start with the usual star of the various string theories we have.
I thought it was smoother.
One is smoother. Okay, one it lie. Okay, so we have the various, what is in the middle we don't know. This is what I meant to be known, the 11-dimensional N theory. If you don't have the quantum version, we only know certain aspects. And we have the various perturbative regimes of that. The erotic, EA equals E8. And erotic, SO32. And type 1. And if you want, you can add 11-dimensional supergravity. Okay, so, and what we are doing, you want to add it, well, but the understanding, well, the understanding is definitely less than what we have for the string theory, so 11d supra. Okay, so, and what people are doing and what we have all been doing when we're doing these string constructions, we start in certain regimes of the star and try to understand compactifications of string theory to 4 dimensions. And of course, we have some data here, some rough data, what the standard model tells us. And this is, for instance, that we have gauge symmetry in the first place. And we have a chiral spectrum of matter, so we have chirality. And we have some sort of a Higgs mechanism. Break the gauge symmetries and get masses out of that. So we have Yukawa couplings, and we have hierarchies of Yukawa couplings. And anything missing? So on the string theory side, so in order to get all these things, you have already some input. No? So we know that we should look. So first of all, these are all supersymmetric theories. And I mean, from the string theory point of view, what we really understand are also supersymmetric compactifications of these string theories. As far as I know, there is no full construction of a non-supersymmetric string theory up to date. By which I mean really making supersymmetry at the string scale. Yeah, I mean, I know. I mean, you can, of course, do at first n equals 1, and then you break it, of course.
But
no, what I mean by that is I would like to see a conformal field theory re-describing the whole thing.
The 16 string, of course, does that. You're just worried about one with tadpoles there.
Yeah, you have tadpoles. Okay, you have tadpoles. So you have to redefine your background.
Absolutely.
This is what I mean.
Well, there's not a Gromsky description of any phenomenological model with n equals 1 either. You have a...
I know. Of course, you have to break supersymmetry. But nevertheless, we don't really understand these non-supersymmetric strings. That's what I would like to claim. I know a few attempts, of course, to get something with a vanishing cosmological constant.
I think they're just trade-offs. So it's easier to use preservation theory.
Yeah, so here, in general, you have tachyons. And you have... So anyway, the starting point for all constructions up to date is n equals 1.
Yeah?
You see, with n equal 1 supersymmetry, we have controllable string theory calculations, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's an issue of understanding effective theory. So at string scale, at least we have controllable calculations there. And then the issue of Susie breaking and all that is then lumped into understanding effective field theory.
Sure. I think at least I was trying to make a distinction between where string theory itself causes problems and where the control of the low energy effective theory causes infrared problems. And as far as I can tell, n equals zero string theory at high energy looks quite reasonable. The 0-16 string doesn't have high energy problems that we know of. It has low energy problems. And so when you're doing string theory, usually your motivation is high energy, because field theorists do pretty well low energy anyway without us. So in that sense, what string theory really prefers is not clear. What we prefer is n equals 1 because it's easy to compute.
It's better under control.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, again, there are just trade-offs. N equals 1 leads you to need non-perturbative corrections to the potential of a stabilized
module. I will come to this anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
But in the case of n equals 0, it can happen that you don't have those protections. So you have more perturbative terms.
Yes, absolutely.
And then you're controlling it by old-fashioned perturbation theory.
Mm-hmm.
It's at the end of the day, in either case, you're breaking supersymmetry at low energies and to control, potential well enough to describe that. So I really think there's trade-offs. It's not that one is.
Okay. Okay.
Easier to build. And the stringy stuff doesn't really help with any reasonable equals one theory because there are remote fields around. So the string theory is not playing much.
Okay, I will come to some of the questions you were just raising, some of the issues for n equals 1. So all that we're doing definitely is we're using n equals 1 theories. And the main reason is chirality, because only for n equals 1 supersymmetry we find chiral spectrum. First of all, and if we impose n equals 1 on all these different corners here and start constructing compactifications with n equals 1 supersymmetry, we are more or less automatically led also to gauge symmetries, I mean, for the hadronic ones, they are present from the very beginning. But for these ones, we find then that we have to introduce orientiform planes, and then we also get the d-branes on the other side, and then we get gauge symmetries out automatically. Yeah. We find gauge symmetries. We find matter in those representations. And We find in principle also hierarchies. We can get the hierarchies, Yukawas, and so on. And historically, and the first point where people started was with the hadrodic EA quasi 8 hadrodic string, clearly, because it has already nice gauge symmetry at in 10 dimensions. And as we heard also yesterday in the talk, there's a nice way to break this. So you compactify. Let me explain, go through this round, explain some of the issues arising in all these compactifications. Yeah? Okay, let me.
Zero, I mean, those issues you can get there too. You just don't have
the correction. Yes, but if you impose supersymmetry, I mean, then n equals 1 is the most you can have.
Sorry, one last thing, probably choice last thing, zero question, just a double. But so the idea is that you have very low string scale, so that you're not. I mean, how are you
From the bottom, there's certainly a yield threaded motivation for supersymmetry. So you just throw that away and say, well, it's not. So one motivation for this is that if you think about compactification manifolds, which can be large machine and nuclear and truly out of control, there's just exponentially more of them that are curved. So here, when you pick a Calabi out, you're making a very, very special choice, extremely special. So you don't really know what the right notion naturalness is.
I think another important point is to just avoid sloppy thinking. So many of us think the MSSM is likely to be found or some extension. Whether string theory requires that or not, or it's most natural, is a totally different question. And so one shouldn't confuse the two and say, string theory gives n equals 1 because we all think n equals 1 will be found.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of such confusion.
There's a lot of circular argumentation.
Absolutely. Before doing this, maybe there's something in between which I haven't talked about and which would also be covered here in the workshop. And this is when, if we start with supersymmetry at the high scale, so how do we get no supersymmetry at the low scale? And in between, and there are efforts from both sides to make what's happening in between is the breaking of supersymmetry. So computing soft terms, and there are various scenarios like gravity mediation. Gauge mediation. Normandy mediation. Recently I read something about gauge human mediation, but I must say I'm not so familiar with that. Anybody here? So maybe mediation. Okay, so of course here the idea is that we really have, so to say, string theory lives at the high scale, let's say at 10 to the Planck scale, or in the Planck scale and the Gut scale maybe. In GEV. And then we break supersymmetry and compute soft terms, and then we run them down to the TEV scale, and then we compare with experiments. So it's very indirect that string theory in this scenario, so to say, can be compared or gives really predictions, at least for each concrete string compactifications, for the physics at the lower scale. Yeah? Which is different, for instance, for these large extra dimensions, which are possibly can well be found or can well be formulated this theory with the string scale already in the TEV scale.
Can I make a comment on that?
Yeah, please.
I mean, even in the list you have, there's a big difference in status between the different mechanisms.
Yes.
Like gauge mediation, most field theorists wouldn't care about the UV completion, stringy or not. Whereas gravity mediation,
yes,
from the low energy viewpoint, has deep assumptions about high energy.
Absolutely.
Built in.
I agree. So I've come to that.
On the subject of UV sensitivity, cosmology, the most UV sensitive thing is much more primordial and has to do with inflation and sensitivity
to the plots.
So, I suggest adding that to the list.
What strength of energy you want? I mean, here inflation went up. Yeah. Yes, I had inflation. Actually, on my sheets, I had inflation too, of course.
So, basically, gravity, you cannot view it as, example, gravitational effects decoupling.
Gravity mediation?
No, what I meant is here, cosmologically.
So there's a very, very precise statement, which is any inflation model is sensitive to quantum dimension six operators, and any with visible gravity waves is it has a large field range, bigger than the clock spin, so it's UV sensitive.
And in gravity?
It's a smaller amount of data than the LHC will give us, but it's clearly UV sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
In contrast, as Ralph is saying, to the MSSM, which is basically not.
Yep.
Well, but again, the MSSM, if it looks like gravity mediation, it's exactly dimension 6 Planck's suppressed operators, and it's just like small field inflation. It's sensitive to
dimension 6. I agree with what you're saying in general.
But inflation is no matter what.
Right.
Whereas the MSSM is.
Okay. Okay, so let me continue here. So at least I would like to, because this will be one of the main topics, or many talks will be about concrete string constructions, including the one yesterday. So let me give you a sort of, this is now a bit more mathematical, but a kind of data of what of mathematical structures appearing in discussing or describing such string compactifications. So let me go through this list. So if we have V8 plus V8 hydraulic string, so to preserve n equals 1 supersymmetry, this is the old work, because of Witten and Horowitz and Candelas and Strominger. Yeah, so you can formulate more general. So you can have a vector, so you compactify your background on a Calabi-Yau manifold, and in addition, for the left-moving fermions, for the bosonic part of the hydraulic string, so you can embed sort of a vector bundle. So you turn on a background value for the gauge field, and giving the field strength of some certain vector bundle on the Calabi-Yau. And the structure group of this Calabi-Yau, of this vector bundle, determines, if you embed this into one of these V8 vectors, so it determines the observable gauge group. And so the observable gauge group is V8 over the structure group, call it H, of this vector bundle. And as you can see already here, so this is interesting because it's very natural to get gut gauge symmetries out of that. So if you use H to be SU3, SU4, or SU5, so these commutants are E6, SO10, and SU5. So and these are interesting gut groups. And then the matter can be counted by certain cohomology classes of this vector bundle over X. Just give you an example. This is the fundamental representations must be counted by these cohomology classes. So we need methods, mathematics, to compute these classes. H. You can use UN, but not just UN. You have to embed it into E8, so E8 is traceless. So you need at least two UN vectors. Now the overall trace has to vanish. So it's something what appeared yesterday. You can have something like SUN cos U1, for instance, but the total trace must be vanishing. Okay. So what has been discussed to this point I would like to make, also pointing maybe towards future directions here, is, so in most cases, people have really worked here with vector bundles, also yesterday in the talk. But it's not so clear. There's a much more general, so to say, possibility of using here. And this popped already up when people looked at the 0,2 generalization of the linear sigma model by Witten, that in certain cases, the linear sigma model looked completely fine. But when you go to large radius, you don't find a vector bundle over the Calabi-Yau. You just find some sort of a sheaf, a coherent sheaf. Yeah. Yeah, the rank is not constant for a sheaf, so it can jump. No. This hasn't been really studied so far, I think. But in principle, from the linear sigma model, looks completely fine. You can even find Landau-Ginzburg phases in this case, so the CFT looks fine.
Well, we know it has to not be the usual field theory limit, because we know that's in one block of the vector. So it has to be the one of the assumptions. The obvious one.
Well, I don't know. So, write a paper on that. So, I just wanted to point what might be interesting questions. You are always suggesting a solution here. So one kind of, I'm sure you kind of have more general constructions here than just using vector bundles. And maybe you have also different, if you have more general structures here, you might contemplate, of course, here you have to break the gut symmetry And usually, for the erotic string, it's usually broken by discrete Wilson lines. And this makes many of these constructions quite messy, because you have to start with a Calabi-Yau, which allows these discrete Wilson lines, so that the first fundamental clause is non-vanishing. And let me come to that. Is this a problem? I think this is not a problem. You want to have non-perturbative potential. You want to freeze model lie and so on.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, were you saying that there are any of those models that are complete without samples? Without... They are, but they don't have one modulus stabilized.
Yes, so it's a matter of test, of course, yeah.
The analog energy effective theory, but at the string scale per se.
If you generate a Polonyi type superpotential, of course. No, but perturbatively, you haven't solved the equation.
There probably are that just have n equals 1 unbroken and non-operative right. corrections right. and are of no interest.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. But I come to that. I mean, I wanted to discuss this anyway. So, okay, so that's a suggestion. So you can have, usually you have this discrete Wilson lines. And in F theory, I'm jumping ahead a bit, Rother has proposed that you can also, at least in F theory, people are not using discrete Wilson lines now, but they are using really fluxes, so non-vanishing values of the gauge flux to break the gauge symmetry. And embed this into U1y, the hypercharge direction, you can also break, for instance, in SU5 down to the MSSM gauge symmetry. I think one might think about, Rother makes this claim that this cannot be implemented in the erotic string. I'm not so sure yet, because if you use these more general sheaves, which are also might be localized on the subspace only, not on the whole Calabi-Yau, and then you can also think about fluxes being localized just on two cycles, say, on this four-dimensional subspace, which are non-trivial on the fourth cycle, but trivial in the ambient on the whole Calabi-Yau. So I think this. If you allow these sheaves, there might be the possibility of also using this trick or this breaking of gauge symmetry.
So, obviously, it's probably also broken of breaking gauge symmetry by localized fluxes, which are localized.
But you can do the breaking. The problem is not, it's more involved. I mean, you can do the breaking also here. The point is, you want to stay massless. Generally, if you break it, it gets a mass via the Green-Schwarz mechanism.
Obviously, the point is still massless. So.
This I find amazing. Is it true?
Could you say again, Mike? You say you can get non-anomalous you want by giving.
So, if you can have certain orbital fixed particles, the H-symmetry is broken to a standard one, if you wish, and this corresponds to localized flux, which is localized just at the singularity, if you wish. And then at that point, there's no, the gate volume does not necessarily get massive.
That's
only if you're
going to
blow up this
one.
That is a
sheaf. This is a sheaf problem.
Okay,
because you're shrunk this to zero size. So if you would blow, what would happen if you blow up the
then it gets massive.
Then it gets massive, so you generate a green.
Yeah, but there's no reason to blow it up.
But then you have all these moduli. I mean. So let me. I haven't seen it, but I'm not, at least not directly, that you start with SU5, embed this flux, and let it stay as massless.
One more question.
Yeah.
A nice feature of Wilson lines is they can allow you to preserve unification. Does U1y mechanism, does it naturally destroy unification, or is it not understood yet?
You're asking a question? There was this. I wrote a paper on that. But we had a strong discussion last week, or 2 weeks ago in Munich about that. So what I did, I would say, of course, there's a correction. So, but this is more, let's discuss it. Let me not put too much detail. So in type 2B or antiphonals with O7 and D7 brains. And then you get a correction from this term from the Chern-Simons action, essentially. Integrated over the D7 brain, where your gut symmetry is localized, and then you turn on the bath with this gauge fields, and then you get a correction. This is correction is different for the three gauge couplings. And I claim that this is, of course, spoiling unification. But if you take the running, so if you take the running into account at certain thresholds in between, so at the unification scale, now you get these things have split. Yeah. So the, if you just use the usual running, of course, they don't unify anymore. But if you, by this flux, on the other hand, there are certain, usually you design it such a way that you solve the triplet doublet switching problem. That the gauge flux, the one gauge flux, restricts non-trivially on certain two cycles. Yeah.
Yes,
on the meta cycles. So, and if you assume that the triplet has a mass in between the string scale and the weak scale, and take this threshold into account, then these things run in such a way that they precisely satisfy this one relation among the gauge couplings you find here, still at the gut scale. Yeah? But these are the natural exotics which appear here anyway. Because, yeah.
Is that more of a coincidence? Or
I don't know. This is at least an observation. I made.
There's all kinds of things to match the threshold corrections that split the couplings at the gut scale.
So, but here in front, here is the tau, so, and the whole thing, the whole gauge coupling, at least the gauge kinetic function, is then, say, the four cycle volume where your D7 ring is wrapped on, and this tau is this. I'm jumping now, unfortunately, a bit ahead of what I wanted to say anyway. It's now. The axial dilaton multiplet. So here in front is the dilaton for type 2b. Now the question is whether this survives if you really go to F theory. So in F theory, or put another way, if you would think about this from the hadronic string, this would be already a one loop effect. This is for sure. So in F theory, it's not so clear. In F theory, there's some combination of the complex. I mean, the dilaton is not fundamental. Everything is explained in terms of the complex structure moduli. So there are the complex structure moduli appearing in some combination here in front. And then the question is this still the leading order, so to say, in the difference between in the splitting between the MSSM gauge couplings or not? And I'm not completely sure, I have to say. I have some ideas that it still has to satisfy this single relation in the whole F theory, not just in the perturbative limit, but I'm not yet completely sure.
How are you sure about F theory in general about the field theory? I mean, if you're an existing couple string, you know that you start with field theory, and you can find what possible in F theory.
On the D7 brain locus. Well, on the D7 brain, the dilaton vanishes. Actually. So as long as I'm staying on the D7 brain, I think I can trust just my gauge theory on the D7 brain.
But only on one single?
On each D7 brain, the gauge coupling is more.
Well, I think it really is sort of nice that Martin Reinhold is going to workshop, right? And going to hadronic and comparing the hadronic calculation to the F3 calculation in the instance 2094. Then you actually see that relation is sort of incorporated in the KK.
In KK, but this is not, first, this is not a problem.
It's not a problem, no.
The question is, the question is not whether this is one loop or it's not. The question is, if you turn on this flux, is this the leading order splitting of the gauge couplings? And this can still be true, even though it's at one loop. I think this is not still, you know. I mean, we're jumping really ahead, so maybe let me continue. F theory would be the last thing I wanted to mention. If this is okay. Okay, because it was just this question. Okay, so.
Because F function, right, it's holomorphic function. So
yes.
It's protected by
correct. This is correct.
You use the power of holomorphicity of that function to argue
Yes. Of course, there are non holomorphic contributions as well.
Yeah, but there is Wilsonian picture where.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a Kaplanovsky-Lewis formula.
Yeah. So, can't you trust that part or have reliable?
The number. I mean, the non holomorphic part, I mean, this is just the Kähler. But I think so, because this is just the meta. That's the metamatrics, yeah? The metamatrics for the meta fields. But for the meta fields, I mean, the gate, the U1 Y flux restricts trivially on the meta curves. So this shouldn't depend on the U1 Y flux. And this is all I need. I'm not saying there is no contribution. I'm just saying this is universal. It doesn't depend on the U1 Y flux. think you can trust it. I mean, you can trust that this is the leading, for oriented force and type 2B, this is the leading order contribution for the splitting of the three gauge clusters.
So would you still call this unified model
then? Or would phenomenology? It doesn't give you any prediction. It's different from, no, it's not on the same level as gauge coupling unification, where you have one prediction. You have two relations at the gut scale. Here we just have one single relation, so you're losing this predictivity. It doesn't predict anything, but it's still consistent. Yeah? Because otherwise it would be really dangerous. If this is the fact, it's Boyd's, then at least, I mean, of course, this splitting, I have to say, becomes smaller and smaller the higher this intermediate scale is, so this threshold scale of the Higgs triplets. Yeah? So then if you move this there, which you would do probably anywhere, then this splitting becomes smaller and smaller. I think this is the status. I mean, I think there are still room for a paper to be written on this and clarify this in F theory. Okay, but actually I wanted to talk about the harmonic string, which I've done.
Let me just... It's a whole discussion tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, I wanted to say one thing. This is what also Eva mentioned, and also Shamit. This is the general question. I mean, once we have n equals 1 supersymmetry, we get all these nice features, but we all get a lot of problems because we get all these singlets. Massless singlets, so which are related, of course, to infinitesimal deformations of the background geometry, of the vector bundle in this case. And so we get all these problems, cosmological problems with the singlets, with force, and cosmological moduli problems. So the whole issue, I think, but let's clear.
I mean, those are exotic things, but there is the issue that Eva said.
Notice.
Chiral matter is such an, I think, generic, non-trivial aspect of string compartimentations. I'm saying that as a major plus thing.
You think it's a matter of plushing to have chiral matter?
That we get chiral matter. That's so crucial, right?
But to understand this, but to understand the moduli space or its n equals 1 spaces, you have to take care of these singlets. These are the main issue. I mean, because everything else, I mean, all what we are doing with moduli stabilization, inflation, I mean, is related to these singlets. Yeah? And indeed, n equals 1 supersymmetry tells you, of course, there's a superpotential gauge kinetic function and it's another supergravity approximation and the Kähler. Kähler form, Kähler matrix, and in particular, you generate a scalar potential from the superpotential, and this is in general, here you have non-renormalization theorems, so it's tree level, which is in general non-vanishing already, and then you have this sum over certain instantons. And the hydraulic strings, these are Wellsheet instantons. Oops, I'm sorry. So these are Wellsheet instantons. And there's and here in front there's a one loop Pfaffian, And these are complicated things, and these are again moduli dependent. For instance, here depending on the complex structure and the vector bundle moduli, and even this is non-vanishing. This is in general the integral over omega, which is the Chern-Simons form. Yeah, so you automatically you have the singlets, but you generate a scalar or superpotential for them. And then you have, again, if you have U1 symmetries, or if for the gauge symmetries, you also have D-term potentials.
So is there a way of thinking about different types of singlets? One are clearly moduli associated with Calabi alcohol, right? Are there some singlets that you sort of view coming from charge sector? They are just singlets under standard model, right? So I'm just trying to say, are there? Thinking about different types of
things. In harmonic M theory, the H1 of the vector bundle would be located on planes.
Sorry, the endomorphisms of the vector bundle. Mm-hmm. And the Calabi-Yau moduli would be in bulk, so they are distinct.
So they are different types of singlets.
But they talk, I mean, they talk nevertheless. I mean, this thing depends on both. I mean, they talk to each other. So you have this whole possible moduli space, and then you have to figure out what are really moduli, what fields become massive via this generation of the superpotential, which stay massless.
Yeah. As far as Calabi-Yau goes, you would have total complex structure modular
vector bundle moduli
plus the additional matter singlets, right? Not all vector bundle moduli would be singlets. I mean, they could be additional singlets that are not vector bundle moduli.
There are flat directions involving charged fields,
right,
which
means
they become same.
Okay, and then there's this nice result by Eva and Witten and later on by Beasley, telling us that for a certain subset of these constructions, given by this precisely by these linear sigma models, the claim is that this thing actually is zero, that the sum over all these worldsheet instantons add up to zero. A highly non-trivial statement. I don't know, at that time it was taken as an advantage. But today we would say it's a disadvantage because actually we want to have this scalar potential and we want to freeze this moduli. We want to have dynamics on the moduli space.
Right, but it doesn't.
And I keep trying to explain, as in some ways that's similar.
Mm-hmm.
It's even classical.
It was the Beasley-Witten thing with this canceling, often they cancel, but it wasn't obvious that it always canceled. And in fact, you can show that it doesn't always cancel. If you look at these things are just a sum of the Gromov Witten curves. And if you have torsion in the theory, then in fact you get the bases of each of these curves.
Yeah.
So we actually showed both LeBron and others that you don't have to cancel.
This was limited to linear signal models.
Yeah, but if you have different bundles, I guess. You probably have elliptic vibrations, then you get vector cover constructions or something like that. Yeah.
Be that as it may, it's not in general required that these things cancel.
No, not at all. But for the subset of construction, linear sigma models, so Monod constructions, it seems to cancel. And I was wondering why, because if you look, it's just an idea. I mean, I haven't really thought deeply about this, but so I wonder whether there's a relation. If you have an elliptic vibration, and then you can use the Friedman-Morgan-Witten construction for vector bundles, spectral cover constructions, and then if you think about what these linear sigma models and these sort of bundles correspond to in this language, it's a highly there was one paper by Bershadsky, Green, and others. Three citations or so, but they found out that these constructions are very specific. If you watch them from if you consider them from the spectral cover construction, they correspond to a completely degenerate spectral cover. So the spectral cover, spectral cover. So in general, for an SUN bundle, it's something n times sigma plus p star, and some pullback of some class in the base. And this thing is hardly, so this really splits into, so I'm speaking sigma hoch n, or n times sigma, I think I write it n times sigma, plus this class. It factorizes completely.
Can you see which part is splitting, the zero section?
Everything, it splits completely. So it's n times this part, and then times this part, plus this part. So it factorizes completely.
So I'm not quite sure I understand, that's the normal.
This is the homology class.
What is splitting now?
This thing is splitting. This homology class is splitting into its factor, so to say. It factorizes completely. And I don't know whether there's a relation between this factorization and, that the sum here is vanishing. I'm just wondering. It could be that. For the spectral cover construction, not in general. It's very specific. The linear sigma model description is very specific from the spectral cover construction because then the spectral cover splits completely. And only in this case, maybe you find that this time really, maybe there's a one-to-one correspondence between splitting and having that this easily written sum, so to say, that vanishes.
Excuse me, when spectral surface splits, it means the bundle is splitting. It's not reducible anymore. I thought that these linear sigma models, they were describing irreducible bundles, so I'm not sure I understand this connection. You said reducible surface means a reducible bundle in heterogeneity. So, but I thought the linear sigma models were written,
yes,
they were actually didn't, in many cases, include a reducible bundle. So,
yes.
And for those, I don't see this connection.
Well, this is their claim. Even for the tangent bundle, they found this result, that the spectral cover completely split. Maybe it's, let's see.
I don't know. Okay.
Yeah, but the spectral cover is a bit more complicated. I mean, you...
But what is the base of the Calabi app that they're doing this on, do you know? Is it specified, or...?
Let's see. In their example, they have a couple of five examples or so, specific examples, and they always find that it splits.
So what, the starting point is just some specific small class model.
They're making the claim that for all these linear sigma models, the spectral cover splits completely.
But
this is not. No, this is has nothing to do with Beasley Witten. This is what I was just proposing. Yeah. Everyone can think about it. I'm not trying to solve this here. I just want to give you problems. Yeah. If you think this is not a worthwhile problem, then that's fine. For me. Okay. So maybe continue. So in the same sort of problems and structures which are visible already in the hydraulic string.
Can I make one comment about that?
Yep.
I'm trying to understand. I don't want to get too technical.
They all appear. Uh-huh.
I mean, the vanishing of this is really important for phenomenology, right? You lose a super potential for vector.
Yeah.
But the truth is, if you start on a Calabi that happens to have torsion, which is really easy to do, and it's not a strange thing. And in fact, you can show that you will not get this cancellation, and so I don't know if generically it's a problem there at all. It just hasn't been explored.
Yes, I agree.
Most people believe most models are not gauge linear sigma models.
Yes.
I just want to point that out.
Yep. No, I agree.
At first sight, it seems.
It's not a problem of the hydraulic string per se. I completely agree. So it's a problem of this sort of class of vector bundles. In former times, it was taken as advantages.
I was thinking just in general, for basically the reason you're arguing that n equals 1 is an advantage, which is to say that at some level, there's no potential.
Yeah.
But you're just procrastinating, right, when you make such arguments.
No, I would just...
Eventually...
Maybe I should have mentioned n equals 0 at all, but getting all this discussion now at...
But that's why I was thinking, because at a certain level, things were flat, and there weren't tadpoles, but, you know...
They come in again. But they are more controllable because you have non-randomization theorems. You know what kind of. I would think so.
If there's LHC has supersymmetry, people will like supersymmetric models, and it doesn't do well.
Yeah. Contributing to the superpotential?
You could get an opportunity.
Things that we worried on the D-brain side, even for very specialized examples, basically that example, gave us non-zero answers from the instantons.
Yes? The superpotential, I'm confused.
Because there's always a, like, you think that in FTM3, there's always a more isolated curve where you just slide.
You're saying they have too many zero modes? That's what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Well, it's believed that there could be five brain instantons contributing to superpotential.
In a broad enough class of models, there must be, or you'd be saying there are never e to the minus 1 over g squared corrections, which we know macroscopically must exist in many cases.
Yeah.
So there must be in some cases.
I mean, the argument that's usually given is that you just have to make sure you've got the right number to open the theorem, and that normally means you're talking about isolated curves. But obviously, if you're wrapping the entire club with the tight frame, then the integral direction.
You can move in the interval.
Sure. So you have to have some way of wrestling with that.
Okay, so the same story. I mean, at least the same structure in the effective theory repeats itself if you now use, for instance, brain constructions, so brain models. Yeah. So various kinds have been constructed and discussed, type 2A and type 2B. Also, I should mention also to for the orbifold people here. Of course, you can also use orbifold constructions. Then you are sitting, or Gapner constructions, then you are sitting at a very particular point in modular space, and then you get sometimes even more singlets, and then you have to worry about how these singlets become massive. And then you also compute a superpotential, make an expansion in these massless fields, and see whether there are any flat directions.
Then you have CFT.
Yeah, CFT, but you are sitting at a very particular point only, so you have really control only over this point, and then you have to use sort of perturbation theory away from this point. Okay, so in type 2A, type 2B, the story is very similar in some sense. So here, well, you also want to have n equals 1, so you're doing orientifolds. So you compactify also on a Calabi-Yau and using some involutions, and then you're doing orientifolds of that. So for instance, for type 2A, you're looking for something, a quotient like omega times some anti-holomorphic involution on TBFL. And you get O6 planes, and you cancel these tadpoles by introducing D6 planes. Now with vanishing gauge flux on top of that for supersymmetry. And then your chi spectrum now comes from the topologic intersection numbers between these D6 planes. Okay, so in this case, there are various kinds. So you can use the type 1 string directly. So then you are dealing with O9, maybe O5 planes. Or you can use models where you do something like omega sigma minus 1 to the FL so that you get O7 or 3 planes. And this will lead directly to F theory. Okay, so here you would introduce, for instance, D7 planes. But in addition, you can turn on some gauge locks on the D7 planes. So you have some vector bundle on these D7 planes as well. So you are sort of in a mixed situation where your things are not space-time filling, also internally, but in addition can carry a vector bundle. So in some sense, it's the most complicated construction you can do. But it seems that new features arise in this kind of construction.
What is more geometric thing? Do you have to do all it in looking that at intersecting seven brains on a curve, a complex curve?
Yes, sure. It's half-half. No? So you have intersecting the seven brains on a curve. But for chirality QT, also your vector bundle has to be non-trivial. This already tells you that this is the other configurations you have to look at. So for the chiral spectrum, you know, NAB something, you have to compute something like CA, CB. So the section curve of your devices, the D7 brands are wrapping, times C1 of the vector bundle, restricted on this curve. You know. So this tells you that you really, to get chiral models, you have to use both intersections and non-trivial vector bundles. And in addition, you find this, again, superpotential for this case, which is, again, tree level, plus, again, in this case, here I should say, okay, so in this case here, this is actually the tree level in GS, these are meant by GS. Here you have a sum over worldsheet instantons, minus T, plus a sum over D2 brain instantons. Which depend on the complex structure moduli. Yeah. And here the prefactor, the one loop determinant, is again a sum over worldsheet instantons. So it's highly complicated. So there are always instantons involved. And so from the M theory point of view, these are all M2 brain instantons. Yeah. The worldsheet instantons wrapping the internal cycle and the D2 brains. So you get directly by transversal M2 brain. Here the situation is slightly different. Here you have a tree level potential again, depending on the complex structure moduli. And then you have a sum over D3 brain instantons. In type 2B, with 7 and D3 brains. And here is some function. Complex structure moduli. And here again, you can ask the question, or you have to find a solution to the problem, what is actually the moduli space of your theory?
I'm sorry, above, I mean, there are classical contributions if you turn on flux, just like there are in type 2B, right?
In type 2A?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, flux.
In fact, they actually depend on both Kaler and complex moduli.
Yes. In 2A?
Yes.
Yes, in 2A. Okay, good. And so this framework here, so to say, the type 2B constructions, I mean, this has the one which was mostly used in the past for really studying concretely modular stabilization. I think this is a fair statement. And all the scenarios we have, the most prominent ones, KKOT, maybe a large volume construction, large volume scenario by Cambridge group, so Quevedo and Conlon. So they were using this type 2B sort of setup and then trying to sort of say minimize this sort of super potential, various contributions. It's a two-step process. I think all of you are familiar with that. Okay.
So one thing that they explained was how to make the W3 small so that it could reasonably compete against the tiny.
You mean the large volume, yes?
Well,
okay, yeah.
Is there an analog to even the hydraulic thing and the hydraulic
mechanisms? It's not hard to say.
The flux is real. H3 is real there, whereas H3 is complex.
Yes.
So are there any ideas, I guess, that require small numbers that you need to input in the
fractional flux thing?
Well, also, if you go to more general heterotic models, not on Kalamiaos, you get H3 plus IDJ, and that's exactly analogous, and you should be able to do it, but we just don't know a lot of examples of these. You know more of these manifolds with weird G structures. Or,
yeah. So you're adding metric fluxes.
Yeah. Metric fluxes, yeah.
So those are always
the two types I know come from, they control the manifold just by using T2S or air symmetry. So it's these generalized mirror manifolds where they get an SU3 structure where they know behavior performance that they need to know just by mirror symmetry to a club. Yeah. And then there's things like these free alpha applications where basically they don't even T2 like that to a club. Yeah, in some cases.
So the issue
of really
heterotic
is
basically a single separate model, right?
Yeah.
Whereas inside two, you can
put
this down model here and
just get
multiple
values in the rest. That's not so easy. Definitely not. No, it's not so easy. I mean, the interrelations between fluxes, brains, and what you can do are free with anomalies. It's not that you can do this modularity principle of getting standard model here, having fluxes there, freezing everything. This is not. I think you can't. If you take all the stringy consistency rules seriously, you can't.
Not in the no-go theorem,
but it's not that easy, I'm saying.
And don't you have a precise statement, which is anomalous U1s that always kind of come with standard model constructions lead to some shifting axion that causes trouble with the most naive ways of stabilizing?
Yes.
So if you have chiral matter, there really is a sharp statement.
We had a paper on that. So if you have chiral matter and you want to use the instanton to stabilize the moduli where the standard model lives, you are forced to get fermionic zero modes. Because there's at least one intersection of the instanton with one of the D7 brains, and then you get chiral zero modes, and then you get the superpotential anymore.
So the
instanton doesn't contribute.
Their model on a three brain.
So it's not.
It's a weird singular. I mean, there. Most 2B constructions that people like involve seven brains.
Yeah.
I'm just saying there are very clear statements that these guys have made.
No, but I'm reading this all the time. You know, you're doing this and this and that, and then you put it together. It's not that easy. If you have a global model, you can't really.
Sorry. Seven brains are more like heterotic. It's, three brains are just sort of localized objects.
But three brains have moduli in general. Three brains on a smooth Calabi-Yau have moduli. I mean, you can shift it. So you have to have, if you want to have your standard model on a D3 brain, you get a joint matter. I'm not talking about the three brains on singularities now. No? No, because these three brains on singularities are D7 brains wrapping some internal cycle, collapsing to zero size with some vector bundle on top of that. I'm talking about the smooth case, not at the singular point.
And actually, at the same level that you get any e to the minus phi effect, three brain module, I get lifted. That's a complicated story.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a theorem that they have.
Yeah.
That would be Fargo's theorem. Exactly.
Then if you have flux, there's another, there's free Lidner anomaly issue. So if you have a flux somewhere, you're not allowed to put a brain somewhere where the flux, so to say, is non-zero through the brain.
Yeah. So all of the things in heterotic is less modular than
sense.
Okay, if you want. That's certainly true. Yeah. Okay, so where I am. Yeah, one thing I wanted to say, so here there were many sort of constructions and also by people in the room, but mostly on for the type 2A thing, mostly on toroidal orbifolds, which is definitely not a general generic subclass of models. And the problem is, of course, for supersymmetry, these six brains, they have to wrap three cycles now on your Calabi-Yau. So, and this is not complex geometry anymore. So you have to deal with the three cycles. In fact, they are special Lagrangian three cycles. And there's not so much known about these special Lagrangian three cycles on Calabi-Yaus. And for toroidal orbifolds, you can find them and construct them, but not for generic Calabi-Yaus. But there are methods which you can use, and this has also been used by Schellekens, for instance. Again, you can use conformal field theory like Gapner models and construct sort of A-type boundary states. Yeah, this can be done, and then you can try to build models with these A-type boundary states and compute the master spectrum just by specific methods. But again, in this case, you're just sitting at a very peculiar point in modelized space. Yeah. Same story for type 2B Orient defaults, has been done mostly for toroidal orbifolds. But here you can also use other methods. We have done this. For instance, at least I would like to mention this matrix factorization. Which gives you sort of a description of D-brains, boundary states, in terms of the Landau-Ginzburg model. They're given by factorizations of the Landau-Ginzburg superpotential W. So people have mostly studied specific cases here, but not really built complete models. But in principle, that should be possible. But they would be on the same status as Gapner constructions.
So. Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
There are rigorous statements that matrix factorizations give you the whole derived category.
Yeah, the whole thing, yeah.
It's been proved in some cases.
Yeah, different from the Gapner construction.
So that's much more general. But in the heterotic side, mm-hmm. is there an analog of this matrix factorization construction that would let you just write down all models on a Calabi-Yau?
I don't know.
I mean, it seems very natural to me.
You mean to use the Landau-Ginzburg model for the heterotic string? And
but so now the 0-2 model is boundary model. There should be a generalization of something. Right?
Good question.
Too bad Hans Jokers isn't here because I think he has some statements.
Who?
Hans Jokers?
Okay. Oh,
yeah. But I think it's
for the 0-2 side.
Okay. So this. Okay, so finally then let me come to F theory, which will also. Yes, in type 1, of course, you can do type 1. But then you have, of course, this has also been done. You're not at the AEA quasi 8 point, so to say you are using, this is very similar to the heterotic SO32 string. It's not so natural. I should mention, this I didn't do. So for heterotic string, it's natural to get all these gut symmetries by easy constructions. In this case here, because you have these different brain stacks, it's much more natural to start with a standard model gauge symmetry at the very beginning. So you have a stack with SU3, a stack with SU2, a stack with U1. So you would try, it's more natural to start with something like this from the very beginning. Then, of course, something like gauge communification, if it's really true, would just be an accident. And there are really, there's a problem with these constructions, because this really comes all, if you think group theoretically, this has its origin in, so to say, SO32. And you can't see structures, so to say, which are related to E8 cross E8, to the exceptional gauge symmetries. You can't get from these intersecting brain constructions, for instance. And in particular, you can't get E6, for instance. Yeah? So E6 gauge symmetry, that's obvious. But as a consequence, you can't find spinor representations of SO10. And you can't find new cover couplings 10, 10, 5 in SU5, because their group theoretical origin is in this exceptional group. Yeah, and this is now where the F theory comes into the game, at least from the phenomenological side, because F theory, so to say, also allows you, or gives enough freedom if you want, but taking also non-perturbative effects into account, that you find these exceptional structures also on your 7 brains. Yeah? So what F theory from the type 2B perspective does is it allows for more general 7 brains. Not just these 7 brains, but these more general PQ7 brains. And the related monodromies. And we combine these things, so to say, to a compactification. Yeah. And it's done in a purely geometric way. So the location of these PQ7 brains, so to say, is encoded in F-theory, which is a 12-dimensional theory, in the degeneration. So first you have an elliptic vibration. So your axiodilaton is identified with a complex structure of an elliptic curve, fibered over some base manifold, such that the whole thing preserves n equals 1 supersymmetry, which means that the whole thing, in this case, has to be a collabial fourfold. But it's elliptically fibered over some base manifold, which is not collabial anymore. Or maybe should that be 3? Yeah, and the location of the 7 brains is, so to say, where divided F3, I think. There's some prefectors, I think 27 and 4. It's precisely where this discriminant vanishes, which is here in the denominator. So this is the Weierstrass divided. So you describe your collabial fourfold as a Weierstrass vibration, F^4 + g, and then your discriminant is given like that. And the nice thing is that the location of the 7 brains, let's say, are encoded purely in the geometry. And then you can develop tools, for instance, also for matter. So you get gauge symmetries in this purely geometric way, and the matter comes, so to say, where 2 7 brains intersect, which means that geometrically, this is located on curves, where, so to say, the vanishing order of the discriminant jumps or gets enhanced. Yeah, so they have enhanced degeneration over curves. I mean, I don't want to give you an introduction to F3. We have talks about this anyway. This is very very similar to these type 2B orientifold constructions, at least to say what the co-dimensions of these objects are is concerned. But it's much more general, because if you use these other PQ7 brains, then it's possible to get exceptional gauge groups. I'll just give you an example. So for instance, if you take the combination of a D7 brain, 8^5, and then take 3 other PQ7 brains, where B is a 1-1 brain, and C is a 1-1 brain, and this is a 1 called a 1-0 brain, this is a D7 brain. So this stack of D brains, for instance, gives you E6. And the math.
E6 squared.
Is this important? I mean, no, I mean, is there not a monodromy, a transformation that gives you one idea? Sorry. Okay. So it gives you, E6. And the massless new states. So I would like to tell you how to understand this from the 2B perspective and not just trust your geometry. Geometry, the elliptic vibration does everything correct automatically. But what's going on here, that instead of just having open strings stretched between the D7 brains, which gives you massless excitations, massless modes, you now have much more complicated string junctions with various ends on these A, B, C brains. So there can be objects like a string junction, which has now 4 ends. Yeah, so it can go from A to an A brain, and, for instance, ending on a BC brain. Yeah? So you have now massless modes which carry more charges, if you want, than just the open strings. And by this, you fill out really the adjoint representation of E6 in this case. So this is known, this paper by Zwiebach, Gabedi on that. Yeah? Okay, so now, my God, so you get all these F-theory constructions now, and you have, of course, the same problems as before. You also get moduli, and you also have to talk about the superpotential generated by them, and you have to compute the effective actions, and so on. So the problems, okay, so in this case, I know there has been advocated an approach to just use purely local approach to construct such models, and then sort of get general general predictions out of such a local construction. Of course, there are certain things which, for which you really can't use just the local construction. And eventually, you won't like to know if you, by such general, so to say, assumptions, you find an interesting model, and you find maybe that it's really consistent with your experimental results. Eventually, you would like to know whether this is really the unified model, and you would like to know whether it's coupling consistently to gravity. And so you want to have the compact, complex, so to say, completion of this local model, for one thing. But then there are more intrinsic things. I don't want to know the whole critics on this work here of Waffer and Hagman, but there are things which are not so straightforward to see. For instance, they have this idea of using the U1Y flux to break the gut symmetry. And the main property of this U1Y flux is that if you have your GUT7 brain, that it's supported on a two-cycle, which is non-trivial on S, but trivial on the Calabi-Yau. But to decide whether it's trivial on the Calabi-Yau, you have to know the Calabi-Yau. That's clear, yeah? So you have to know something about the global. If you really would like to make the statement clear, so to say, and prove it, you have to know what the complete Calabi-Yau manifold is. Otherwise, you can't claim that it's trivial. Yeah? OK, and then it comes to breaking supersymmetry. It's a delicate issue. And
in the first case, is there an example of explicit embedding of U1 plugs into compact?
This we have done, yes. We have constructed. There's no, of course, I'm not doubting that it's not possible, but at a certain point, you can't really just argue locally. This is my point. At a certain point, you have to have the global structure and take the global structure into account. Also, when you discuss breaking supersymmetry, I would say. Because, of course, you can make the claim that you break supersymmetry by gauge mediation. This is what they are doing. Yeah. But I don't know of any global string constructions where we have really realized gauge mediation in a satisfactory way. In the sense that it's really the leading order supersymmetry breaking mechanism.
But gauge mediation is how it's mediated. The breaking mechanism is.
Yes, but even if it's mediated, yeah. I mean,
you don't know if gauge mediation dominates.
I don't know any case where gauge mediation has been consistently realized in any string compactifications, like a Strenger statement. So if you really think about it dynamically, in the sense that you're not what they are doing, I think, what I understand. So they have Fayolopoulos terms in their models.
They don't stabilize them.
I mean, they just take them as parameters, and in fact, they are depending on certain moduli, the T moduli here. So they are depending on certain moduli, and they are just assuming that they are constants. And you can't do that. I mean, this is not. I mean, you can always. I mean, if you just fix some of the parameters, you can derive anything out of that. Yeah. I mean, some sort of potential, and the true minimum is here. If you set one parameter like here and you are just cutting it here, you find a decent, vacuum structure on this slide, but it doesn't mean anything, because eventually the whole thing runs down to the supersymmetric minimum. So you can't do this. And this is one criticism, so I think this should be improved. So one of the big questions one can state, I think, is whether gauge mediation can be realized in string theory.
Can I ask another question, which is related to my question about UV sensitivity? I mean, you mentioned very quickly something that's probably in everyone's mind here, which is write down a model that eventually you're going to know it's the model. I think most of the subtlety in the subject is hidden in that. And
Yeah.
If the real world works by a gut and gauge mediation at 10 TeV, you'll never convince anyone that you have the model. So I think it pays a lot to think about in which scenarios something would be sensitive to high energy physics, and there's a signature of high energy physics that you can possibly test.
Yes.
Or that second step can never be done,
Another way of asking this is, are there new mechanisms in this history that you've given? Could you point to, new mechanisms of chaotic string theory that are distinctive, rather than just trying to reproduce something that
you could look for something which is more restricted than what they could do.
So that's a point. All the gauge couplings are really strongly related to something.
Right,
yeah. And then the duality
Also, an anomaly mediation looks very natural in field theory and very hard to get instructed.
Yeah.
And even if you can, it looks much harder. So a lot of things are
but, I mean, again, this is meant to be a positive question. Again, cosmology, I can tell you an example.
Yeah.
But I'm asking you, I mean, Wilson line breaking might be an example, but I'm not sure it's really.
Which is what you can't realize in field theory, you're saying?
Well, it's a higher dimensional thing.
Okay.
It really uses the structure of the theory.
Some instant ones are going to have field theory interpretation.
Okay. Sure, so you can
Yeah,
if there's you want.
But you'd have to know.
Again, you won't know.
Right. So this seems like a central question. If you're going to do this with the end goal of making contact with something from the LHC, the string theory should be relevant. I mean, if the string theory is done at 10 to the 16 GeV, and all the analysis is field theoretic, and they're down to 10 TeV, and that's where everything happens.
Would you consider this strongly warped scenarios with a low scale? That's a pretty strange thing.
Well, by ADS-CFT, you can always call that field theory also. I mean, I think it's a wonderful development in physics, but it's not.
No, but actually proving that such a CFT exists requires right now some other technique, maybe string theory.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So I think that's right. That's a
good one. But then it's also a distinctive feature, right? We are breaking a C5 gut by Kutcher's law. So as Ralph explained to us, we expect some exotics to be seen at some scale of order 10 to the 14 to 10 to the 15 GeV. So this is a characteristic feature.
And when will the experiment that sees this time?
I mean, if they are present, if you run down a G, you can start seeing some effects.
No, I understand. You can infer indirectly.
And you can see that the scale between S fermions and B genus some a little bit distorted by this effect. So it's a bit different. So it's some characteristic feature.
Yeah, for example, like you're running a PhD in a universal, and this should have some. Like, just ask some crazy phenomenologist could have sat down and computed models, this radical spectrum for models which don't have gauge mediations. We don't because it's unnatural, but here it seems like it's something.
Actually, a lot of gauge mediation models even look at PhD
in
a universal.
Yeah, general. Right? So. But I mean, here you have in addition, maybe
yes, okay.
Okay, so I'm coming to my end. One final comment I would like, which I already did at some other conferences, it's a bit provocative, and I can't really prove it, but we are thinking about your questions and new methods and so on. So this is about the landscape. So we are all now familiar with its 10 to the 500 vacua.
Where did you get that?
Yeah.
Just put it in quotes.
This is the point.
Put it in quotes if you like.
This is the number you read.
Sorry?
This is the number you read. Yeah?
Number.
This is the number you read, you find in the literature, in popular articles, in the newspapers. And
you mean a lot.
It means a lot. There are many vacua. I'm not doubting that there are many. Actually, where it comes from, this is the point, it comes from an estimate being made for flux compactifications in type 2b. Yeah? So you have your tadpole cancellation condition, and then you have some, you know, contribution from the right-hand side, from the orientiform planes, which in F theory would be written like the Euler characteristic of the Calabrian fourfold over 24. And then here you still have the three-brain tadpole, and it has this flux piece in it. Yeah? And then you make an estimate, and then you are counting, so to say, all possible fluxes and all possible vacua. If this thing is fixed, yeah, which lies inside a big ball of this radius. Yeah? I think it's for supersymmetric. I think it's positive. For supersymmetric, I think it's positive.
So possible.
So this is where this number, there's an estimate now for, I mean, the statistical estimate. This comes from, if this thing is called L, I think there's B3.
B3 factorial.
Which
they have for other reasons.
You need a very large number to change that.
I know you do, but this is
supposed
to be.
This is
just a
Wilson Polchinski estimate. No, just. Okay, I mean. So my argumentation would be inherently related to this estimate. Okay. Just, I wanted to say, maybe, so to say, a loophole in this argument. This is my point. I'm not asking, I'm not questioning that there can be some small number of antibrains present. Okay, so L would be contribution from the tadpole, from the orientiform plane. B3 is the number of three cycles you have on your collabial space, and then you introduce your usual numbers for these values. In particular here, I think you have something like 200 or so, and or 400 or 500. and for L, you are looking into your list of collabial fourfolds, and take one with, you know, what I don't know, chi. I'm not quite sure, it's 10^500 or so, yeah. This is very large. I mean, if you think about it from the orientifold constructions, where these numbers are usually 32 or something like that.
The biggest known one is 1,000,000.
Yeah. Of course, yeah, it's a very big, but this is a typical number for, if you look in the list of Kreutzer, you just find a typical number.
You're trying to count all ADS vacuums that are known or something? Or
he's just counting ways to satisfy the tadpole condition a lot.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, we don't enter the number four.
It's not that I'm doing it. I mean, Mike Douglas and these people have done that, and Joe has done that, I think.
Globally consistent supersymmetric solutions.
Supersymmetric solutions, yeah.
They're classically, they have vanishing energy, but they have ISD fluxes, which are in general not supersymmetric.
But then you're putting more, because there's an infinite number of Freund, Rubin, ADS4 solutions, period.
Right.
Maybe.
So the number is infinite without further priors.
Right. Also, type 2A oriented folds will give you infinite numbers,
yeah,
very clearly.
Awesome.
But are these all effectively four dimensions?
The type 2A ones are, yeah.
The flux cut, yeah.
The Freund Rubin ones are.
To SUSY, thinking about globally consistent SUSY solutions. No antibrains, no non-supersymmetric cycles, just strictly SUSY.
In type 2A, you could write down infinite series and arbitrarily weak coupling in large order.
And it's infinite?
It's infinite. But, I mean, it goes off to, you know, it goes off to weaker and weaker coupling. So, you know, if you want G to be a 10, there's a finite number.
It's finite value of G.
Right, by definition, any trustworthy infinite series goes to very weak coupling and very large volume. Right, you can maintain a hierarchy between the volume of the four dimensions and the 10, the ABS radius and the size of the coupling.
Okay, the argument I would, and this, I mean, just give me my argument. Let me tell me your argument. And if I assume that the estimate comes if this is the estimate which was in mind, and there are no other estimates which tell you that there are infinitely many, I think there's one small loophole in this argument. In particular, if you look at this F3D compactifications you are using here on smooth collabials, what kind of actual models they are corresponding to. They are completely boring. They're completely boring. You just have, if there is no orientifold limit, there's just 107 plane. There's just a single D7 brain canceling all the tadpole of the 07 plane. So there's no gauge symmetry, no interesting gauge symmetry. There's no chiral matter and these things going on in these constructions. But if you now establish such a model and now you take a bias, now you want to really to create something like a gut model, for instance. So by wrapping certain brains on certain cycles, so having really a singular collabial fourfold, which degenerates over a certain divisor. In order to compute this number, this is not a straightforward thing. First, you have to resolve this geometry, and then to define what you actually mean by that. And what we have done this for toric varieties, for instance, we have a way to compute these numbers. Of course, these numbers go down. The more gauge symmetry you introduce into your system, these numbers goes down. It goes also down if you have some gauge flux. Which you have to turn on to get chiral matter, gets further down. And so to say, in this framework at least, this number is surely not an interesting number. The interesting number would be, for instance, to solve the cosmological constant problem environmentally, that you still have 10^120 vacua left after you have a decent model of particle physics already realized. And I'm not sure whether this comes out, Well, this number does not decrease such that you don't find this whole number of vacua.
So you're just saying imposing realism will cut down the number drastically.
Yes.
Certainly,
yes.
The infinite series we were talking about go away immediately if you impose any mild constraint on
I think there's a loophole, because this estimate was made just for looking into the list and take a typical collabial fourfold. But these fourfolds are, I think, boring. The interesting ones, which have already interesting gauge dynamics, they have much smaller numbers of kind.
And there are many other loopholes. Actually, in the large flux limit where this result was derived,
yes,
the formula they use for the potential is invalid parametrically. We can talk about that later, but there are many loopholes.
But this is another one.
Yeah.
of saying that having realistic particle physics reduces, it's very unlikely this construction is right. It's very, very few.
Yeah.
In all
Yeah.
Well, you know, string theory wants to be in 10 dimensional, that's most probable, right? So anything that we impose reduces the number of solutions tremendously.
So it would be nice to make this more quantitative, what I was just saying. I haven't really tried, but this would be interesting to do, to make quantitative estimates. I'm not sure how much this really decreases, but...
There were people who actually did try to do that. I don't know, you know, there. In fact, the Berlin group had this, the number of MSSNs, and Mike also had some random estimates of how much things get cut down.
Yes, but...
Assuming independence of...
Yes, yes.
Is that consistent?
Which
inflation?
Berlin group? The one that...
My former Berlin group?
Former Berlin group, I think.
That's no, we were just at intersecting brain configurations.
Okay.
We don't really treat the trucks at all.
I see.
It's just was different.
I thought you were doing type 2As.
And it's type 2A, yes, of course.
You were saying one in every 10 of the 10 models.
Yes, yeah, but this was a very specific setup of type 2A on antifaults on a T6 over Z2 cross Z2.
When more
yeah, there are no. Yeah, now there are more.
And no fluxes.
Okay, maybe. Final thing you should maybe do, and I started, you should, or you ask, to make a list of problems and what might be interesting to look for and to work on. And so from what I mentioned already, a couple of them. So let me just, I know that it's of course related, but let me make a distinction between more mathematical model building problems. And then more phenomenological problems, which are mostly related to modular stabilization, inflation, and so on. Modular stabilization. So all which has to do with the scalars, for instance. So I was suggesting something like sheaves or harmonic strings. And what I didn't mention is, but I mention it now, is in F-theory. There are many problems still in F-theory, of course, it's just beginning. And what I didn't find really satisfying so far is the treatment of G4 form flux in F-theory. When it comes to model building, in all attempts so far, people were not using really the intrinsic formulation of G4 form flux, but we're using still gauge fluxes on the D7 brains and using some spectral cover constructions. There's no really intrinsic formulation, so are using G4 form fluxes, classifying them, and then turning them on. what I just mentioned, maybe called the biased, I don't know whether this is the right English word, biased landscape study. Counting. So where you really, I hope it's the right word. So what I wanted to say is that you take some bias before it, like having the standard model. Is this good English? I don't know. Yeah. Well, also I haven't mentioned, we had a paper on that recently, is this M5 brain instantons in F-theory, for which we find, you know, indirect suggestions how these things are counted, in particular the metamodes. It would be nice to have this derived really from quantization of M5 brain theory. So M5 brain instantons intrinsically. And I know that there's a group working on that intrinsically. This is Donaghi, no? Beasley, Donaghi, Weinhold, I think. I'm working on this now. I'm open for more suggestions from your side.
Actually, I have one suggestion,
yeah?
Relevant for both, which is geometric transitions have actually been really useful in all the non-compact models.
Mm-hmm.
Generalizing those to compact models, I think, would have tremendous use in all these problems.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's good. So for modular stabilization, so it's always the emphasis of dynamically. So we're taking all modular dependencies into account. So dynamical realization of gauge mediation. Without any pre-assumptions, so to say. And I also didn't really talk about this, but also dynamical realization for large volume, yeah, for the other approach or the other, so so to say, prediction, general prediction of scenario for string theory for beyond the standard model particle physics, not supersymmetry, but dynamic realization for large extra dimensions. Yeah, I'm talking about. I mean, this is one example, large volume scenario. But the emphasis is without two light scalars.
Two light means less than 10 to the minus 2 dB.
Yeah, then two light means not spoiling the cosmological, cosmological modular problem.
I think just any concrete de Sitter model with all moduli accounted for explicitly could be on that list without any other biases, since we have priors.
Yeah,
there are scenarios for doing this, but nothing
that's. Yeah, no, the string up. Yes. Also, the Sitter. You have to suggest the Sitter.
Well, and when you say that,
yeah,
the
yeah, yeah. 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 So
you mean something that you would say naturally explains inflation in the context? Just focusing on moduli potentials in this context?
That's
included all these things actually, but let me write it again. So maybe type 2BF theory, also type 2A if you want, modulized stabilization, taking all known consistency conditions really honestly into account.
You mean including something higher like the Sitter model?
Absolutely, and free Witt anomalies and all these things, yeah.
That's actually something.
Fluxes, brains, instantons. So this would be my list from just a few hours of thinking when I was preparing this talk, but I'm sure there are many more questions. And any subfield has its own version questions, I understand. But if somebody,
can I ask a question?
Yeah, a question.
There's at least one phenomenologist in the room. There might be more, but there's at least one. It'd actually be interesting to know what phenomenologists would care to hear about from people who say they're working on string phenomenology. Are there issues that are central in phenomenology in some approaches that could really be informed by string theory, in your opinion, or the opinion of anyone else who comes from that?
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that why people care about game mediation?
Why do we care?
I mean, in gravity mediation, this is the, string can be a motivation for UV complete gravity mediation.
Yeah.
Gauge mediation is UV complete already. What is the challenge? So, and also, there's one comment. Actually, gravity, if you find gravity mediation, it's a good sign of string theory. It's saying that gauge coupling is a field in gravity mediation. Gauging a mass means that gauge coupling is a field. That's
mm-hmm. You
think
there's an F term.
Yeah.
And at 3 level. So it's really a suggestion on string theory.
And you
so
say anomaly mediation and gauge genome mediation also, because they involve sensitivity to high school.
Well, gauge genome mediation, it's as X, but it's a gravity mediation and gauge mediation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can classify gauge mediation, gravity mediation. And anomaly mediation is, again, UV sensitive.
Anyway, so anything except gauge mediation.
But it would be nice to see whether it can be realized in string theory. If gauge mediation is found at LHC, at least summoned by Cyborg.
But it would be amazing if it can't simply because it decouples. I mean, again, most people's philosophy would be something like that that's totally insensitive to high energy physics. It doesn't require anything particularly chiral, vector-like gauge mediation sectors exist. It would be amazing if it can't be realized. It might be technically.
Yep. I haven't seen it yet.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I mean, many open questions from bottom upwards, any new problem and so on. I mean, my personal hope is, of course, to find some answers in string theory, and then you can grow if these answers are true or not. I mean, couple of really open questions which are not solved, and so on. And it would be good if you have a complete model in string theory, which what not give you such an answer, which you have to put in or something like that.
Or maybe string theory has something to say about the cosmological constant problem. That would also be quite nice. Something else than just landscape arguments.
Yeah, but maybe you find something
new, which can be useful. Yeah. What's the difference on the step 2 and step 3 models, which are modular? Yeah. No, I said you can also do step 2A if you want. Everything, yes. I thought 2B and F theory would be the easier, 2B would be the easier part.
Would it sort of be discouraging that 3 years ago we were doing identical issues in the
system? Oh, okay. I didn't know. I was not copying and pasting it from the former wiki.
I think the issues got sharper. For instance, yeah. I think nobody, well, probably nobody would debate, but if you don't have this clash with chirality, right, chiral toy model, non-chiral toy model, and the Berlin group, and also we with the Rutgers group, I think we can do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the problem gets pushed to more and more specific things.
Yeah.
And now it's this clash between shifting, you know, two non-linearly realized U1s and instantons that remains confusing. Mm-hmm. But I think it gets sharper and sharper.
Well, since just emphasizing that second. But it's almost saying it's really more difficult. It's really a difficult issue and realization that there is a real clash there. Not being able to reconcile modular stabilization with having chiral matter of particle physics.
Yeah, this is actually not a rule.
Supersymmetric modular stabilization in a certain scenario.
Right.
That
yes.
Seven branches.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I mean, this is also very related to what Cyber and Komorodzki have been writing papers about, which is in all these things with the anomalous U1s, you also have a Biot-Diopoulos term. And it's not that there's a real conflict, it's that the effective theory that people would use to talk about it is usually the wrong effective theory, because there's guaranteed to be another light field in the problem. And so I don't think it's a very, it's not that it's a deep problem, it's that there's another field in the effective theory and you have to figure out what to do with it.
Actually, can I ask, the field is left as some kind of axiom on field? Is that what you said before?
Which field now?
Or, you know, you said there
wasn't an instant time to be itself. You got
them
in a zero mode. This was my
argument. Yeah.
Yeah. Because of the x-ray symmetry. Yeah. This is the shift symmetry of the axion, absolutely. Yeah.
But it wasn't just...
Yeah. The exponential is not invariant. It's not invariant under the shift. It's the same statement.
No, but there could be some saturated prefactor if you couple this...
Yes, there can be... Yes. Yes, there can be meta field.
That's what we were just saying. It's not a problem, but it means there's another field in the effect.
Yeah.
It could be even useful, this kind of theorem.
Yes, but show me the model. I mean, no, of course there are couplings generated. You have this you have these meta fields now in front of them. Okay, now you have to give a VEF to them. It gets more and more complicated, yeah? So, but show me a model where it works, then I'm happy.
Everyone needs to know a lot about counterproductions.
Yes, yes, yes. These are non-holomorphic couplings. Yes. Yes.
But this is all large volume. Don't you use more or less standard Kähler potential?
Well, you have certain estimates, like from Joe Cornan or something. No? He made this argument about what the volume dependence of the Kähler matrix is. But for the other cycles, well, the cycle volume, not the large volume one, it's not so clear. It depends on what you compute, whether you need this or whether you don't need more information on the Kähler potential.
Yeah. The different approaches that you discuss to get from string theory and effective to bias-effective theory, do you think one could hope eventually of something which could be reversible? I mean, some kind of prediction or some feature.
Yeah, this is also what we should include here, actually. So universal predictions, yeah.
The particular approach is starting, which could be
That's another question. I mean, there are general predictions for sure, but the question is whether they can be confirmed. I think axions, for instance, there are so many axions in all these constructions. But
one can be more specific, whether you could go into some properties of the axions, the number of axions, or for instance, whether the nature of time metric would be more complicated than usually is assumed, that there could be many components.
Yeah, but I don't know whether there's any. The question is there a general statement about this? Of course, every model has its prediction, every setup has its predictions, but not. when for intersecting branches, you would say one rough prediction would be that there are additional U1s, for instance. The presence of these U1 factors is very common because each stack of branch has its own U1. Some of them get massless, some stay massless. So in some sense, it's very natural to have also another massless U1 in the game, which is not the case for the hadronic string, and also maybe not for F theory. Yeah. But nobody would say if you find a Z prime at the LHC that it proves string theory.
just one more point that Diamond and Banks have made strongly is if you actually did try to write down models where you stabilize moduli supersymmetrically at high scale, which is usually what people try, this is in tension with having a QCD axion. So I mean, there's some indications that the strong CP problem is solved the way most of us would think. You shouldn't actually stabilize everything at a high scale supersymmetrically. There should be a few fields left around, maybe associated with this cycle of the standard model wraps, whose partner are going to be the QCD axion. So maybe that's the wrong thing to do.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Now with all this problem solved, we go back to work at Panda. So tomorrow will be our